Hello, listeners, and welcome back to another episode of The Astrologer's Palace, a podcast about the art of memory and the art of astrology. In each episode, as you know, we walk through another one of the signs of the zodiac and give our attention to a series of emblems or images or architectural spaces that are designed to help us awaken the parts of the brain that think with place. In this episode, we're going to be taking a walk through the palace or hall of Leo. As you may remember from previous episodes, there are going to be five chambers on the right-hand side of the hall, the outer side of the building representing the terms. On the inside edge, the side facing the courtyard, there will be three chambers representing the decans. The main body of the hall will be open with a statue on a pedestal in the middle, representing the lion, in this case, of Leo. And around the back will be a set of statues for the triplicities, and a series of paintings on the right-hand wall will hold some significant information about the nature of the sign of Leo. Why do this? Well, medieval astronomers and, in fact, medieval students recognized the power of both imagery and place in their learning processes. They lived in a world in which they navigated by wayfinding. Without maps, they would have to walk place to place. They would have to consult the books in this monastery or that royal palace. They would have to remember the strange and unique images of knights fighting snails or rabbits hunting humans and cooking them over slow fires as a way of recalling information that was stored on the page of beautifully illuminated books. Going back to their home monastery or back to their own community, they would again wayfind, traveling back along various routes, trying to get back to the place that they had started from, perhaps finding the way, perhaps going off on a different adventure to a new book and a new place, but they would have to carry the information with them. Nobody had enough ability to record all of the information available onto a book that contained everything and carry it with them the way that we carry a phone. And so they would have to recall information based on where in the world they had been when they encountered it and what pictures were on the page alongside of the information they were trying to recall. In this way, memory was closely associated both with place, that is to say, where the information was actually stored and learned in the world, and also what pictures called that information to mind. These became enshrined in both classical and medieval memory tools as the art of memory or the palace of memory, using two methods, the method of place and the method of image. Later, memory masters recognized that you did not have to hold on to this information in the real-world setting. It was possible to imagine a setting and store the information in an imaginary place, which was just as effective as storing it in a real location. That is what we're attempting to do in this podcast. I hope that the previous episodes have been useful, and I hope that you'll join us as we walk this time through the Hall of Leo. We begin, as we always have, with a walk through an unfamiliar part of our town where we find Zodiac Street. Turning onto Zodiac Street, we find ourselves walking past unfamiliar houses in a crowded part of town, which gradually opens up into a broad plaza with an iron fence surrounding a large garden. And in the midst of the garden, a vast palace, perhaps the size of a modern football stadium, several hundred feet in diameter, even from the curvature that's visible on this part of the wall, and a street running around the outside, which we are able to follow to the right, all the way around, until we realize at last that there is a gate open. And we look above the gate and we see that it has a curious symbol above the gate, namely the emblem of the sign of Aries, a vertical line with two curling horns coming out of the top of it. And we realize that we have passed this gate before, and if we go through this gate and up to the steps of the palace, we will find ourselves in a vestibule, the vestibule of the equinox. And going up to the second floor, we will find ourselves turning right and entering the Hall of Aries. But this time we keep walking around the outside of the building, along the edge of the iron fence, along the edge of the garden, knowing that just a little ways up ahead there is a second gate, this time marked with the horizontal 6 and 9 of the sign of Cancer, representing the gate of the summer solstice, at least in the northern hemisphere. And as we walk along the outside of this vast edifice, this vast palace, we see that it is roughly round, that the ground floor is stone, and that it is adorned with figures from Egyptian and Babylonian and Sumerian mythology, that it is composed of large stone blocks, and that there are also dancing Indian figures, and perhaps even some Polynesian figures doing the hula in amongst these other figures. And as our eye is drawn upwards, we see that the next floor of the palace, the second floor, pierced with narrow windows, is adorned with Greek and Roman columns and Greek and Roman sculpture and Persian and Arabic tile work. And the third floor is mostly Gothic windows and Persian arabesque arches, and that the fourth story above that is largely composed of the roof itself, modern with elements of English Tudor construction of black wooden timbers and white plaster in between them, and that the roofs are metal and colored or hued in such a way that some sections are red, some sections are blue, some sections are yellow, and some sections are green, all the way around the palace. And even here from the ground floor, it is possible to tell that this vast bulk probably has a courtyard or a great space in the inside. And we walk along the edge of the iron fence, and here indeed is the gate that we have been expecting, the gate with the symbol of Cancer directly above it. And this gate we unlocked the last time, and so we know how to reach through the iron bars and lift the latch from the inside and open the door that allows us to walk through the garden up to the door that leads into the palace, and we find ourselves in the vestibule of the summer solstice. We climb the grand staircase to the second floor, and to the left, we can see a brightly lit yellow-colored hall, which is the Hall of Gemini, and turning to the right, we enter the blue Hall of Cancer. And the walls are a beautiful pale blue that we understand to be the hue and color of cardinal water, because that is the sign of Cancer. And lifting our eyes to the roof, which represents the rulership of the sign of Cancer, we see purple and silver in honor of the moon. As our eyes are drawn back down to the floor, we see here the black tiles representing Saturn, each engraved in white lead, the symbol of Saturn, the cross with the crescent hanging off of the bottom of it. And we pass by the cage, which has the red warrior of Mars rattling the cage and staring angrily at us out through the bars, barely able to achieve his own goals. And the pillars that support the roof and fill the space between the broad windows of the third floor above us, these are blue in honor of Jupiter. And as we walk down the hall, we remember on the right-hand side the emblems of the 5 terms. Mars in the first door, colored bright red. Jupiter in the second door, colored bright blue. Green is the third door in honor of Venus. And the last 2 doors are each black and orange, representing Saturn and Mercury. And the first of these doors, the fourth overall, is black on the top and orange on the bottom for Saturn by day and Mercury by night. And the last door, the fifth door, is orange on top and black on the bottom in honor of Mercury by day and Saturn by night. And so we come to the end of the hall, and we pass through the doors into the Hall of Leo. Here in the hall, bright daylight filters through the broad windows, and the ceiling above us is completely covered in hammered gold, which catches the sunlight and shines brilliantly down upon us and brings with it the heat of the sun. For indeed this space is ruled by the sun, and there is no place within this hall that is not brightly lit, for the sunlight hits the ceiling above and hits the walls in their strong red color and radiates that heat out into the room, and there is no part of this room but it is warm and full of light. In the center is a great stone plinth, and atop that is the image of a roaring lion, its massive face turned towards us, its jaws open wide, and its teeth very, very white. Looking down, you see that the floor is composed of black tiles, adorned in white lead with the emblem of Saturn, the cross with the crescent hanging below it. And turning our attention to the doors on the right-hand side of the hall that lead into the five chambers of the terms, you can see that the first door is blue and has carved large and elaborately the emblem of Jupiter. And above the door is graven the number 8. And moving on to the second door, you find the emblem of Venus carved into a green door. And above the door is carved the number 15. And moving on to the third door, you find that it is the standard double Dutch door with Saturn above in black and Mercury below in orange, and the number 21 carved above the arch of the door. And the fourth door shows Mercury in orange atop the door, and Saturn below the door, and the number 26 carved above the door. And the last door is bright, fresh, bloody red, with the symbol of Mars graven into the door, and the number 30 above it. And turning to the left, away from the outer wall of the palace, you see at the back of the lion, just below its swishing tail, the emblem of the triplicities, a set of three statues standing behind the great lion and facing the door that goes on to the Hall of Virgo. And because this is a place of fire, you can see that standing on the plinth covered in emblems of the sun is in fact the golden figure of Apollo, naked as the day that he was born, and golden-skinned and golden-haired, and pure gold are his eyes. So indeed the sun is the ruler by day. And on the plinth, covered with the emblems of the moon, and draped with starry black fabric, is the figure of Jupiter, fat, 50, enormously pleased with himself, wearing a golden laurel wreath and dressed in a blue toga, and carrying a lightning bolt in his hand is Jupiter. And standing on a lower plinth between them is the figure of Black Saturn in a black robe with a black hood, carrying the scythe sharp as can be, and an hourglass in his other bony hand. And these are the lords of the triplicity. And walking back to the front of the hall, now facing the lion again, you turn this time to the left, to the figures of the Decans and the halls of the Decans, or the chapels of the Decans, along the left-hand inner side of this great hall. And entering the first chapel with the symbol and seal of Saturn on the door and the number 10 carved above the door, you come into a small chamber painted black with two narrow windows facing into the inner courtyard and an altar of black stone in between them. And atop the altar is an altarpiece, and on the altarpiece itself is an image of a tarot card. And the tarot card in question is the Five of Wands. And you recognize the Five of Wands by its clear blue sky and by five men fighting with each other with sticks in their hands. And you leave this chamber and you go into the second chamber, and this one is blue in honor of Jupiter with the number 20 above the door. And here is the Six of Wands, with a laurel wreath above his head, riding into a city or a town surrounded by men, perhaps soldiers, carrying their wands as well. And he has another laurel wreath hanging from the top of his own long staff. And he rides in triumph and victory. Going into the third chapel, with the number 30 carved above the door, you see that this one has the emblem of Mars, and the walls are completely covered with the emblems of Mars. And again, there are two windows, and between them is a red altar, and on the altar is an altarpiece, a painting of the Seven of Wands. And here a man wields a single wand, two-handed, from atop a high place, while six wands are pointed up at him as if to knock him away, and he appears to be fighting with them and beating off his opponents. And these are the chapels of the Decans, dedicated to Saturn, to Jupiter, and Mars in the Hall of the Sun. And turning right from the last of the chapels and passing the doors into the Hall of Virgo on your left, with the figures of the triplicities on your right, the Sun and Jupiter by day and by night, and Saturn as their cooperating lord between them, you come to the first of the paintings, the one by the door of Mars. And upon this door, with the seal of Mars, which is red, just a little bit to the right of it, there is a picture of a man who is holding his ribs and appears to be in some pain and is suffering from convulsions. And even as you watch, one of the hands goes towards his back, holding the pain in his back, and his heart appears to be nearly leaping out of his chest. And you can see from the sweat on his face and from the dryness around his eyes and from the heat that appears to be coming off of him, almost light, he is burning so hard, you can see that he is racked with fever. And you can see, even through his hand clutching his chest all the way to his heart, that his heart is diseased and weak, and it is not beating properly. and his eyes are sore from being dry, and under his armpits and in the clutches of his elbows, you can see black boils as though he were afflicted with the plague, and you can see that his skin is flaky as though afflicted with pestilence, and his skin is not merely red, but it is also yellow as though he were suffering from jaundice. And you realize that these are the diseases that are associated with Leo. The pleurisies in the chest and the sicknesses that one finds in the ribs and in the lungs and the convulsions and the racking of the body, back pain and difficulties with the heart and fevers and plague and pestilence and jaundice. And these are the illnesses of Leo. And going on to the next painting, you find that it is a landscape painting showing the great outdoors. And you can see that it is a pool in the woods with dense forest all the way around, and there's a little bit of a clearing along one edge of the woods, and a number of wild beasts have come down to the water's edge in order to drink. Where the forest ends, you can see a wide sandy place like the dunes behind a beach. And a little bit into the forest, you can see some steep and rocky slopes and some high points on rocks. And these places appear to be very nearly inaccessible, so steep are the hillsides that climb to them. And beyond that, you can see a turnoff from a road. And there you can see a place where people might park their cars before walking into the woods, because parkland is also associated with Leo, and places where hunters or walkers or pleasure seekers might go. And you go on to the next painting, and this one is a place indoors. And the picture has been divided up into many different sections, so that you can see that one section of the painting is a king's palace, while in another, men are lounging about as though in the garrison of a fort. And in both rooms, both in the royal palace part of the picture and in the place where the garrison sits ready to defend the fortress, there is a fireplace, and the chimney is quite obvious in both paintings rising up out of the room, because wherever the primary fire in the house is, that also is Leo. And the last painting in this gallery of rogues is that of a man. He has a big round head and large eyes, and he appears perpetually surprised in this picture, and his eyes almost sort of leap out of his head, but you can tell that there's a great deal of intelligence and perceptivity in those eyes. His body is big, full, and you can see that he is neither muscular and lean nor fat. He is of middle stature, with shoulders broader than his waist. His sides sort of tuck in like a V, and he has strong oblique muscles, and he has yellow to dark hair, and a great deal of it is curly, like a lion's hair is curly, or a lion's mane. And there is a fair degree of fierceness in his face, with high cheekbones and ruddy cheeks and a strong complexion. And you can tell from the way that he stands and the way that he holds himself that this is a man of action and activity and a fair bit of courage. And so you walk back to the front of the hall by the doors that you came in, with the door of Jupiter on the right-hand side, and on the left-hand side, going into the first chapel of the decans, black for Jupiter. And there is one last painting. And this one shows the parts of Europe that are colored red in honor of Leo. Most of Italy is colored red, but parts of Hungary and Bohemia and Czechoslovakia are colored red. The Alps, being a high and inaccessible place, are colored red. And so is Sicily, which has its share of inaccessible places and places where wild beasts frequent. Turkey is colored red. And Apulia, a province of southern Italy, is colored red, as is the city of Rome. And Syracuse in Sicily has a little flag coming out of it that is red, as does Ravenna in the northeast of Italy. And far off on the eastern left-hand side of the map, the city of Damascus has that same red flag. And in Czechoslovakia, so does Prague. And in England, so does the city of Bristol. And these are the places that are associated with Leo. And walking back through the hall, you pass by all of these emblems, walk around once, and see the painting of the sicknesses of Leo, and see the places where wild beasts frequent in the outside landscape, see the king's palace and the soldiers at leisure in their fortress, and everyone close to the fire in the interior painting. See the painting of the goggle-eyed man with the big head and bright eyes, broad shoulders, and curly flaxen hair. And see that painting, and then finally the map. Walk past one more time the chapels of the Decans, dedicated to Saturn, to Jupiter, and to Mars, and come back along the edge of the hall, past the five chapels of the Terms in reverse order. First Mars, and then Mercury and Saturn by day and by night, and then Saturn by day and Mercury by night as the middle of the five doors, and then Venus, and then first of all Jupiter, and you are back by the door that leads into the Hall of Cancer. And you go through the door into the Hall of Cancer, and you find yourself walking down the left outer side of the hall, backwards, past the doors of Mercury and Saturn, and then Saturn and Mercury, and then Venus, and then Jupiter, and then Mars, and then finally into the vestibule of the solstice, where the stairs go down and the door lets you out into the garden, and out through the garden gate, and back out into the plaza around the great palace. And so you make your way home. Thank you for joining us for another episode of The Astrologer's Palace. Next time we'll be walking through the Hall of Virgo, and the time after that we will have a special guest to join us at the midpoint of the year, at the start of the third quarter, Scott Gosnell. Thank you very much for listening.